the Kincaid inner circle. It was as simple as that.
I'll see what I can find out about Jackson,
Levi finally said, his voice even and practical.
I have someone at the station who owes me a favor, and I'll get them to run a thorough background check on the guy to see if he has anything glaring in his past, or any kind of record or issues that we should be concerned about.
That's kind of invasive, don't you think? Tara asked, the comment escaping her before she realized just how biased her question sounded.
We have no idea who he is.
Clay was still sitting behind his desk, and he leaned back in his chair as his gaze met Tara's.
Not really.
Or what he wants,
Mason piped in once more. She laughed, but the sound lacked any real humor.
What if he just wants to get to know the three brothers that he was separated from at birth?
Clay frowned at her.
Why are you defending him?
The room grew quiet as three pairs of eyes studied her way too intently.
I'm not defending him.
Yeah, you are,
Mason said, his voice gruff as his suspicious gaze narrowed even further.
Did Jackson get inside your head before we got here? Is that why you're on his side?
What?
She gaped at Mason, unable to believe that he'd just accused Jackson of brainwashing her. Exasperation and frustration made her voice rise a few notches.
Oh my God, no, he didn't get inside my head. He asked about you guys. He was genuinely interested in knowing about all three of you.
And what did you tell him?
Levi asked.
Just general stuff that he could find out on his own if he wanted to.
That was the truth. She hadn't revealed anything personal or private. Clay scrubbed a hand along his unshaven jaw and sighed heavily.
If Jackson comes around again, stay away from him until Levi finds out more about who he is.
She was used to Clay being protective, and normally she appreciated his concern, but there was nothing that Jackson had said or done during his short time in the bar that had led her to believe he was dangerous in any way.
He doesn't seem like a serial killer to me, she said.
You don't know that,
Mason said, bickering with her as if she were a sibling. She gave him a barely tolerable look.
You're impossible, you know that? How does Katrina put up with you on a daily basis?
When he smirked, she held up her hand to cut him off, knowing he was about to spout off something inappropriate and crass.
Never mind, don't answer that.
Her imploring gaze sought out Clay's instead, because out of the three brothers, she knew he was the least likely person in this room to make assumptions about a person's character based on outward appearance and 1 15-minute conversation. She knew this because Clay had taken a chance on her when she'd had nothing and no one, when she'd been so lost and alone and needed just one person to believe in her. He'd given her that faith.
Don't be so quick to cast judgment against Jackson before you get to know him. That's not what you do or who you are, Clay.
There was a reason he'd been nicknamed Saint Clay, and she appealed to that kindness and altruistic side of his personality now.
You've always seen the good in people, and you've always given them a chance to prove themselves and their integrity. Jackson is your twin brother, and he deserves that chance.
Clay nodded in understanding, but didn't soften completely.
He's a stranger, and I'm just trying to protect my family,
he said quietly.
And I respect that.
She truly did, especially after all that they'd been through.
I just don't want the three of you to have any regrets later on.
Knowing she'd said enough, she decided it was time for her to leave the office.
I need to get back to the bar, she said, and turned to go.
Tara.
At the sound of Clay calling her name, she faced him again, wondering if she'd said too much or had gone too far.
Yes?
Next Saturday, schedule yourself off for the day and night,
Clay said.
Amanda can handle things for the evening.
Not what she'd expected at all. As the manager of Kincaid's, a position Clay had promoted her to when she'd finally finished her college courses a few weeks ago and could devote more time to the business side of the bar, she always worked weekends. Amanda was trained to close the bar with the help of a few other employees, but she found Clay's request an odd one. She tipped her head curiously.
Okay, mind if I ask why?
A fond smile curved his lips, all traces of their more serious conversation about Jackson gone.
Because Samantha, Katrina, and Sarah decided that's when we're having a barbecue at our place to celebrate you graduating from college and getting your business degree. Did you really think we were going to let something huge like that go by without recognition?
She swallowed back the swell of emotion that rose in her throat, but there was nothing she could do about the warmth she could feel sweeping across her cheeks.
You don't have to do that. It's not a big deal.
It's a huge fucking deal, Mason said affectionately. We're proud of you. Between school and exams and being at the bar, you worked your ass off. Besides, it's a great excuse to drink, party, and get wild and crazy.
Of course it is, she said on a laugh. It sounds like fun. Thank you.
Leave it to the Kincaid brothers to surprise her with something so sweet, which just made her feel a little guilty for backing Jackson and pushing for them to give him the benefit of the doubt. She told herself she'd done it for them, and she had, but she couldn't deny the part of her that wanted to see Jackson Stone again. Chapter 3. Feeling moody and restless, Jackson stood in front of the floor-to-ceiling window in the living room of his Lakeshore condo, staring out at the myriad of lights twinkling below as dusk settled over the city. It had been one hell of a long fucking week at work, from numerous client presentations to attending a groundbreaking ceremony for a new office building in downtown Chicago, to handling environmental issues that had come across his desk. He'd sat through a dozen long, drawn-out meetings with engineering consultants and had stayed late most nights discussing a structural issue that was causing massive delays on one of the firm's billion-dollar projects. Tonight, he'd actually gotten home at a reasonable hour, if a regular person considered 9 in the evening normal, he thought wryly. He'd taken a long, hot shower, heated up leftover spaghetti he'd had in the refrigerator for dinner, and eaten the meal while reviewing some proposals he'd brought home with him. But here in his condo, where it was too damn quiet and there weren't any hectic demands constantly diverting his attention, his mind taunted him with the harsh knowledge that he clearly wasn't good enough to be welcomed into the Kincaid family. Leaning against the back of the leather couch a few feet away from the plate glass window, he rubbed at the tension settling in his neck and shoulders. 7 days had passed since he'd walked into Clay's bar and met his brothers for the first time. 7 days without any contact from them. Their silence spoke louder than words and cut deeper than a knife, and he fucking hated that their rejection affected him on any kind of emotional level, that their approval and acceptance mattered that much to him because it was the one thing in his life that Paul Stone had cruelly and deliberately deprived him of. Fuck. He'd never been one to feel sorry for himself. He was a man who made things happen and didn't wallow in things he couldn't change. But he'd be lying if he didn't admit that he'd foolishly believed that by reaching out to the men who shared the same genes as him, it would finally give him that sense of belonging that had eluded him his whole life. But so far, making contact with the Kincaid brothers had only brought him a wealth of disappointment and frustration. The three of them had made it very clear, or at least Mason had, that they doubted his intentions and believed he had ulterior motives, and Jackson knew there was nothing else he could say or do to sway their opinion. The next move was up to them, and after last week's confrontation in Clay's office, he had a feeling that hell might freeze over before any of them made any kind of contact. But Tara, the beautiful bartender, was nothing like the terse, skeptical men he'd faced off with. Despite the vulnerable edge he'd detected in her, she'd been warm and encouraging, so sweet and easy to talk to, the total opposite of the women he normally interacted with in his social circle. Tara hadn't prejudged him based on his appearance, hadn't made assumptions about his character based on preconceived notions. Instead, she'd willingly given him what the Kincaid brothers had withheld, unconditional acceptance. And that open and trusting approach, along with that spark of mutual attraction between them, had visions of her drifting through his mind as he lay in bed at night trying to fall asleep. His thoughts of Tara always started off innocently enough, remembering her sweet smile or recalling the way that diamond stud above her lip caught the light when she glanced his way. But those chaste images never lasted long before they strayed down a path rife with filthy, forbidden fantasies, the kind that had her splayed out on his bed for his pleasure, naked and needy and begging, while his mouth and fingers and cock did unspeakably dirty things to that soft, wet spot between her legs before he drove balls deep inside of her. He momentarily closed his eyes and groaned as a jolt of lust tightened in his groin. A familiar throb took up residence, and he didn't dare press his palm over the hard column of flesh pushing against the soft cotton shorts he'd put on after his shower, because he didn't trust himself not to wrap his hand around his dick and jerk off right there in front of the windows in his living room. Jesus, he needed a distraction. He considered turning on his laptop to review the specs he'd just received on an upcoming project, but his mind wasn't in work mode. He could call his best friend, Wes Sinclair, to meet him at the Pop Cherry, a trendy bar they frequented in downtown Chicago, but he wasn't in the mood for the kind of socializing that usually led to fending off women he had no interest in. Or he could always go to bed early, but Jackson wasn't tired, and, well, he knew how that would end. He knew where he wanted to be, the same place he'd thought about going back to for the past week, and it had nothing to do with wanting to see his brothers again, and everything to do with the sexy bartender he couldn't get out of his head. Fuck it. He glanced back at the clock on the wall. It was nearly 10 at night on a Wednesday. He knew Kincaid's closed at 11 Sunday through Thursday. Yeah, he'd looked up that information, because it wasn't the first time he'd contemplated a return. The strained way things had ended with his siblings had kept him from following through on the impulse, but tonight, he didn't give a shit if Clay or Mason or Levi had an issue with him being at the bar. Kincaid's was open to the public, and he was a paying customer. The gloom hanging over him dissipated as anticipation took its place. Before he talked himself out of his spontaneous decision, he changed into a pair of jeans and a casual shirt and arrived at Kincaid's 20 minutes after leaving his condo. He walked inside the establishment. Rock music played through the sound system, but the place was surprisingly empty. No customers, and he didn't see the two bar waitresses from last week either. He did hear voices and sounds coming from an area that appeared to be a kitchen, so he assumed the bar was still open, even if it was a slow night. He glanced over at the bar, and a smile curved his lips as he caught a side view of Tara as she wiped down the counter, probably cleaning up for the night since they closed in half an hour. She was singing along to "You Give Love a Bad Name" by Bon Jovi, oblivious to the fact that he was standing just out of her line of vision, which he didn't mind one bit, because it gave him the opportunity to watch as her breasts swayed against her tight t-shirt each time her arms swept back and forth across the surface of the bar, and she shook her perfect ass and swayed her hips in time to the beat. Heat coursed through his veins, and his cock stirred. Oh yeah, he was feeling much better already. Relaxed and amused and getting more and more aroused with every second that passed. All thoughts of work fled, along with thoughts of his brothers. Just seeing this woman seemed to calm the storm of emotions that had been raging through him earlier. This was exactly what he needed. She was what he needed. Tara provided a lighthearted diversion in a life that suddenly felt much too complicated, and she also made him realize how much he'd missed wanting to be around a woman for the sheer pleasure and enjoyment of it, without any pressures or expectations. As Tara sang the ending lyrics to the song, she glanced his way and did a quick double take. Much to his disappointment, she abruptly stopped cleaning the counter, which meant her bouncing tits came to a standstill and she no longer rolled her hips in a way that made him envision her sitting astride his cock, gyrating on top of him and giving him a provocative lap dance using the same sensual technique. Those gorgeous blue eyes rounded in surprise at seeing him, then quickly ebbed to genuine delight. "Jackson," she said, her voice breathless, and he didn't think it was from all her singing and dancing.
"You recognized me,"
he teased as he came up to the other side of the bar across from where she was standing. The fact that she could tell him apart from his twin this time told Jackson that he at least had some distinctive traits. A sexy, mischievous grin found a place on her full, kissable lips.
Of course I recognized you. Clay has never stared at my ass before, and he's never looked at me like he wants to.
As if she belatedly realized how much she'd been about to divulge, her words trailed off, and her soft, creamy complexion turned blush pink. Don't go all shy on me now, sweetheart. It was the last thing he wanted with her, and he dared to finish that sentence, just to test the flirtatious waters between them.
Like he wants to do bad, dirty things to you?
Tara swallowed hard, but never broke eye contact with him.
Yes. That.
She sounded flustered, but not at all offended by his blatant words that summed up just how strongly he was attracted to her.
Guilty as charged.
His tone was playful as he slid onto one of the empty bar stools across from her.
On both accounts.
Because, yeah, he'd stared at her perky ass, and he definitely wanted to do wicked things with her. She laughed, the sound just as inviting as she was.
At least you're honest.
Always, he said, and meant it.
After being lied to his entire life about numerous things, integrity was the thing he valued the most, in himself and from other people.
If you're looking for Clay, he isn't here, she said, obviously assuming the reason for his visit.
He smiled at her.
I didn't think he would be.
Oh.
She tipped her head to the side, looking adorably curious.
Then what brings you by?
He met her gaze, held it intently.
You?
She looked both shocked and undeniably pleased.
Why me?
I believe we just established the why, he said with humor as he clasped his hands on the bar.
He wasn't one to play games and decided to take the direct approach so she'd have no doubts about his interest in her.
But just in case you missed all that flirtatious banter about me eyeing your sexy backside, and maybe, if I'm lucky, eventually we'll do dirty, bad things together, I'm very attracted to you. I thought the attraction was reciprocated.
It was. It is, she added, quick to change past tense to present. I just thought you were here to see one of the guys.
He shook his head.
Unfortunately, they have no desire to see me.
Saying the words out loud felt like a physical punch to the gut.
I haven't heard from any of them since last week, so I'm pretty sure I'm persona non grata around here. But I thought you were worth the risk of getting thrown out on my ass if one of them happened to be here.
She didn't laugh at his comment as he'd hoped. Instead, her lips flattened into a disappointed frown.
I'm sorry that the guys are being so stubborn and short-sighted about you.
Don't be.
He shrugged it off, not wanting to get into a conversation about his brother's rejection.
It is what it is.
With every day that passed, he was becoming more resigned to the possibility that the situation might not ever change.
Yeah, good mantra, she said, her eyes suddenly sparkling with approval. It's mine, too. It's gotten me through some tough times in life.
He wanted to know about those difficult circumstances, wanted to know why there was a slight edge to her, yet she could be so kind and compassionate, too. It was a combination he found intriguing and tempting, and it made him want to peel back all those fascinating layers to discover all the secrets that lay beneath.
Would you like something to drink? She asked, pulling his attention back to her. Bushmills neat?
Not tonight.
It was late, and he didn't want any alcohol to dull his senses, not when he was around her.
I'll have a soda water with lime.
While she made his drink, he withdrew his wallet, pulled out a $10 bill, and pushed it across the counter toward her as she set his order on a cocktail napkin in front of him.
Keep the change, he said.
Seriously?
She crossed her arms over her chest in annoyance and eyed the money, but didn't pick it up.
It's soda water, for heaven's sake.
I know exactly what it is, he said,
squeezing the lime into the sparkling water before dropping the piece of fruit into the liquid.
But that's not the point.
He'd already made that particular point last week when he'd paid for his drink then as well. It was an argument she wasn't going to win. She knew it too, because she picked up the cash with a frustrated sigh.
I see you have your brother's obstinate streak.
Must be a family trait.
He bit the inside of his cheek, trying not to laugh at how cute she looked being miffed with him. Cute and hot, he amended, as his gaze focused on those pouty lips of hers, which then transitioned to lustful thoughts on her soft mouth and all the ways he'd imagined defiling it. She turned away to put the money into the cash register, and predictably, his eyes lowered to her perfectly rounded ass.
Jesus, he was such a fucking pervert.
Not wanting to get caught leering at her again, he made sure he was looking above her chest by the time she faced him again.
What time do you get out of here tonight?
He asked, then took a drink of his lime-flavored water. She began washing glasses in a small sink behind the bar.
I'm the only one in the bar closing up. It was so slow I sent the waitresses home. The guys in the kitchen finish with their cleanup around 11:30, so that's when I lock up.
Any plans after that?
At midnight? She laughed as she dried a martini glass. The only plan I have is to crawl into my nice soft bed with a book and read until I fall asleep.
And there went his rampant thoughts again, as he envisioned her in his bed, stripped naked and legs spread, her creamy skin a stark contrast to his navy blue comforter, and all that thick, luxurious black hair spread across his white pillow. No doubt, if he had her anywhere near his bed, reading or sleeping would be the last thing she'd be doing. Not that they were going to have sex tonight, but it wasn't as though he hadn't thought of the possibility of fucking her. Yeah, that was a nightly fantasy that always left him hard and aching, just like he was beginning to feel now. He shifted on the bar stool in lieu of reaching down to adjust his dick that was pressing against the fly of his jeans. Grateful that she didn't have a view of his lap and his lack of physical restraint when it came to thoughts of getting down and dirty with her, he shifted the conversation back on track.
I know I might be cutting into your beauty sleep, but would you like to go and get a coffee at that 24-hour donut shop down the road once you're off for the night?
Any other woman he'd gone out with in the past would have scoffed at the suggestion of going to what they'd consider a substandard eatery, let alone accompany him to this run-down neighborhood in Chicago. But Tara's eyes lit up at the invitation. She batted her eyes at him in a playful manner.
Are you asking me out on a date, Mr. Stone?
Yes.
A part of him was relieved she hadn't flat-out turned him down. She at least looked as though she was considering his offer.
I'd take you somewhere far more impressive, but there's not much open at this time of the night.
Lucky for you, donuts are my weakness, and one of the few things I can't resist, she said, rearranging a few of the bottles of alcohol that were lined up in a bin. And oh my God, Angelo makes the best apple fritters in the entire city, and just thinking about them is making my mouth water.
Her enthusiasm made him grin.
Is that a yes?
That is a hell yeah, she said, and laughed.
Now that he'd secured more time with Tara, he let her continue with her cleanup of the bar, doing his best not to distract her so she'd finish as soon as possible. At 11 straight up, she locked the main doors and cashed out the register and took the money back to the office. While she was gone, a young kid came out from the back area and began putting chairs up on the tables. As he swept the floor, he kept one eye on Jackson, and it was clear that the kid had heard about him and couldn't decide if he was a threat of some sort or not. It all depended on what information had filtered through the gossip mill about his meeting with the Kincaid brothers. If Mason was to be believed, then Jackson was sure he was branded as public enemy number one.
That's Elijah, Tara said when she came back from whatever she was doing in the office and saw him glancing at the boy. He's a great kid. Clay found him rummaging through the dumpster for something to eat and gave him a job.
Before Jackson could reply, a man's voice spoke.
Tara, are you about finished up?
The guy asked as he limped into the bar area.
The kitchen is clean and...
His words abruptly stopped as the man's one good eye that wasn't covered with a patch stared at Jackson in that way he was becoming all too familiar with, perceptive and a whole lot standoffish. Now that the employees at Kincaid's knew about him, they weren't so quick to assume he was Clay.
"You must be the twin,"
the other man said gruffly.
"That would be me,"
he replied in a pleasant tone as he extended his hand toward the man in a friendly gesture, since he was standing close enough.
"I'm Jackson."
The guy hesitated, then finally stepped forward and clasped Jackson's hand in his strong, unrelenting grip, silently sending a message Jackson would have had to be an idiot to miss. This man was clearly Team Kincaid, and if handshakes could talk, this one would say, "You do anything even remotely sketchy, and I will gladly kick your ass."
"Hank,"
he said brusquely, introducing himself before he glanced at Tara behind the bar.
"You almost done out here?"
"Yes." She stacked a few racks of clean glasses on top of each other. "If you and Elijah are finished, you can go ahead and leave. I'll have Jackson walk me out to my car." A muscle in Hank's jaw ticked.
"I don't think Clay would be too happy if he found out."
Tara held up a hand. "Let me deal with Clay, okay? The boys might have personal issues with Jackson, but I don't. Since they aren't here, and I'm in charge, I'm assuring you that I'll be absolutely fine in this man's company, so I'll see you and Elijah tomorrow afternoon for your shifts." Boom. Mic drop. Jackson tamped down the grin threatening to appear. Beautiful and defiant. A woman who knew her own mind and was strong enough to assert herself when warranted. Another huge fucking turn-on, especially when he thought about controlling that rebellious streak of hers in the bedroom, calling the shots, pinning her down while she bucked beneath the onslaught of his mouth and fingers, taking her hard and deep and demanding her surrender. He exhaled a slow breath, which helped somewhat to banish those images from his mind. Hank scowled at him one more time, and thank fucking God he wasn't a mind reader, but didn't argue further with Tara. Within the next 5 minutes, Elijah and Hank were both gone, leaving him alone with Tara.
"You all are a loyal bunch, aren't you?"
he asked wryly. "Hank's a good guy," she said, as she bent down to retrieve her purse from a locked cupboard. "But yeah, he's loyal too. He's former military, and he lost his leg and right eye to an IED, which also caused facial nerve damage. Clay hired Hank when no one else would."
Jesus, there was no way he could compete with Saint Clay, not on any level.
As much as his twin irked him for being so cool and reserved with Jackson, he had a lot of respect for the man and how he treated people. It said a lot about Clay's character and the kind of man he was, one with integrity, despite his shitty upbringing.
"Is this donut date going to be an issue with the guys?"
he asked, keeping his question light and humorous as he slid off his bar stool. Jackson didn't want to give a fuck what any of his brothers thought about his interest in Tara, but he also didn't want them to give her flack about him either. She came around the bar, keys in hand as she switched off the lights in the main area.
"As much as I love those three guys like they're my brothers, they don't have a say in who I see."
Now that she was on the same side of the bar as him, she stopped an arm's length away and met his gaze.
"Are you having second thoughts about me?"
The unexpected hint of doubt and insecurity swimming in her blue eyes had him instinctively reaching out to touch her, to reassure her that he wasn't a man easily intimidated when he wanted something. And his desire for Tara was only growing stronger, not lessening in any way, and he wasn't ready to walk away from whatever was happening between them. He brushed his fingers along the soft skin of her jaw, and when her lips parted slightly and her eyes softened, it took every ounce of restraint he had not to slide his hand around the back of her neck and pull her mouth up to his for a hot, deep, claiming kiss. Instead, he settled with the knowledge that she wouldn't have stopped him if he had followed through with the impulse. Her clear consent would have to be enough for now, because he didn't think he'd be able to stop with just one taste. He gently caressed his thumb along her full bottom lip before dropping his hand back down to his side.
Believe me when I say I'm not even close to changing my mind about you,
he promised her. Her tongue skimmed across the place his finger had just touched, and she looked up at him with a smile that was filled with relief and quickly turned to bright-eyed sass.
Good. Now let's go get donuts.
Chapter 4 Jackson glanced in his rearview mirror to make sure Taro was still following his car. The donut shop was only a few blocks away, but she'd insisted on driving herself, which was fine with him. But considering the area, he wanted to keep a close eye on her and her vehicle until they arrived and he had her safely inside the place. Which was ridiculous, considering Tara seemed street smart and perfectly capable of taking care of herself. She gave him the distinct impression that she could handle all sorts of trouble without the help of a man, but he was quickly discovering that she roused protective instincts in him that he was finding hard to shake. In a short time, she'd gotten under his skin, and it was even more shocking that he'd allowed his fascination with her to evolve into something close to an obsession. And now here he was, taking Tara on a date of all things, when it was nearly midnight on a work night. He grinned and shook his head at the insane situation. He was going to be exhausted tomorrow at the office, but he didn't really care. For the first time since his divorce 3 years ago, he actually wanted to get to know a woman better, instead of bypassing any kind of getting-to-know-you conversation and getting down to the basics of sex and physical release. His infatuation with Taro was out of character for him, but he wasn't going to question such a strong, instantaneous connection to this woman when so much in his life had been clouded with uncertainty and that vague sense that something was missing. With the discovery of his adoption and having a twin brother, he now understood where that void stemmed from and why he'd always struggled with a disconnect from his own family. There was something about Tara and her lack of judgment about who he was that made him feel as though he finally fit in somewhere, that maybe, possibly, he'd found someone who truly understood him. The illuminated sign for Angelo's Donuts came into view, and Jackson turned into the small corner lot and parked his car behind the brick building. Tara's older model Toyota took the space next to his Porsche, and they both got out of their vehicles at the same time and met up behind his.
"Nice ride," she said, nodding her head toward his shiny gray Carrera. "Aren't you afraid your car might get jacked in this neighborhood?"
The thought had crossed his mind, but he wasn't about to admit it and come off as an egotistical jerk who had an issue being in her part of the city.
"That's what LoJack and insurance are for, right?"
he said of the tracking and recovery system he'd purchased with the car. She laughed lightly.
"I guess so. Hopefully you won't have to put it to the test."
They walked toward the front of the building, where two police cars were parked. The uniformed officers were standing by the trunks of one of their vehicles, drinking coffee and eating a donut while shooting the shit with each other. He glanced at the men, expecting one of them to be Levi, because of course that would be just his luck, but neither of their faces was familiar. Jackson placed a hand on the small of Tara's back as an excuse to touch her as he guided her toward the front entrance, nodding toward the show of law enforcement.
"I don't think I have to worry too much about my car,"
he said in a low voice.
"The place looks pretty well protected."
"Yeah, the cops around here love Angelo's."
As they passed the officers, Tara gave them a friendly nod, then said in a low voice only Jackson could hear,
"Then again, what decent cop doesn't like a good donut?"
He chuckled as he opened the glass door for her.
"That's so cliche."
"I know, but it made you laugh."
She gave him a cheeky grin as she brushed past him with a bounce in her step, and he had to resist the urge to smack her ass for being so impudent. The fact that he was that comfortable with her this quickly should have had him throwing up his walls to keep his emotional distance, but instead he let himself embrace the relaxed, easygoing sensation coursing through him. Tonight was all about enjoying himself with Tara, without second-guessing or over-examining whatever this was developing between them. Surprisingly, for as late as it was, there were a few people in the shop, testimony to just how good the treats in this place were. As they walked up to the glass display housing an array of different donuts, a young man who looked to be in his early 20s grinned at Tara.
"Hey, Tara, it's good to see you,"
the dark-haired man with a slight Italian accent said. His gaze shifted to Jackson, the same friendly smile on his face.
"And what are you doing here so late? Don't you have a wife at home waiting for you? Or are you here because she's got a late-night craving?"
"Dante, this isn't Clay,"
Tara explained quickly, because clearly the guy was referring to Clay's wife, Samantha.
"It's his twin brother, Jackson, and this is Dante, Angelo's son," she said.
Dante's brows shot up to his forehead.
"Oh, wow."
Jackson braced himself for that adverse reaction he was getting used to, like the one he'd just been dealt back at the bar with Hank, but Dante clearly didn't know the dynamics of the situation that made Jackson an outsider to the Kincaid clan, because he didn't hesitate to thrust his hand across the counter for Jackson to shake.
"Nice to meet you, man,"
Dante said, without an ounce of awkwardness between them, his tone completely sincere.
"What can I get for you two?"
"I'll take a large black coffee and an apple fritter,"
Jackson said, going with Tara's recommendation. Tara bit her bottom lip, an indecisive frown creasing her brows as she looked into the display case.
"Now that I'm here, I can't decide. Do I want the donut with the sprinkles on it, the chocolate French cruller, or the apple fritter?"
"How about all three?"
Jackson suggested. She gave him a sexy, sidelong glance.
"Are you trying to seduce me with donuts?"
"I might be."
He winked at her. A small, beguiling smile curved up the corner of her mouth. She certainly didn't appear opposed to the idea, and he had to shove his hands into the front pockets of his jeans so he didn't drag her out of here and make good on that promise. Tara glanced back at Dante.
"I'll have a coffee and an apple fritter, too," she told him.
The kid bagged their donuts and set their items on the counter. Jackson paid for their order, and while Tara stopped to put cream and sugar into her coffee, he carried their late-night snack to a vacant table away from the front area so they'd have some privacy. She joined him a few minutes later and took a seat across from him. Once they each had one of the deep-fried donuts set out on a napkin in front of them, still warm from being freshly made, he watched as she pulled off a corner and popped it into her mouth. She chewed, and a soft moan rumbled up from her throat as she closed her eyes as if to savor the taste. But all Jackson could think about was her making that same arousing sigh of pleasure while he was buried deep inside her body. Another bite, and she made the same sound again, and this time his cock hardened with lust.
"Fuck. Please don't do that."
His voice sounded strangled. He felt strangled. Her guileless gaze met his, and she looked genuinely confused.
"Do what?"
He swallowed his own bite of fritter, and damn, it was that good.
"Moan like that."
It took her a moment to catch his understanding, but when she did, the wicked light that glimmered in her gorgeous blue eyes tempted and enticed him, as did the sparkle of the diamond above her lip.
"Like what?"
she dared. Did she really think he wouldn't accept that challenge? He leaned across the table, his voice low and direct.
"Like you're in the throes of an orgasm."
"I can't help myself."
Her perfectly straight teeth grazed her bottom lip, scraping off a smudge of sugary glaze that he wanted to lick off for himself.
"These fritters are crispy and buttery and sweet, and all the bad things I shouldn't have."
He took a sip of his coffee, his eyes meeting hers from over the rim of the paper cup for a moment before he set it back down.
"Am I one of those bad things?"
he teased.
"Probably."
An emotion he couldn't name crossed her features, bringing with it a vulnerability that changed the undertone of their flirty exchange and made her expression turn more serious than he'd intended.
"But there's something about you I find hard to say no to."
He felt the same compelling attraction.
"Then don't,"
he said, meaning it. A wry smile tipped up the corner of her mouth.
"There's so many reasons I should say no."
"Clay, Mason, and Levi?"
he guessed. She shook her head as she ate another bite of her donut, much more demurely this time, and without the sound effects that had led them down this path of conversation in the first place.
Believe it or not, they aren't at the top of the list.
Surprise flickered through him.
Care to tell me what is?
She wrapped her slender fingers around her paper cup, seemingly considering his question, but something ultimately held her back from confiding in him.
No, I'd rather not.
Fair enough.
Was he disappointed not to discover why she believed she shouldn't be here with him? Absolutely, but he wasn't one to push or pry, and what he wanted more than anything was to get them back to that place where they were both comfortable with one another.
Then how about you tell me how long you've been working for Clay?
She latched onto the safer topic and smiled.
It's been about 6 years. I started at Kincaid's as a cocktail waitress, and he eventually trained me as a bartender while I went to school part-time for a business degree.
Jackson recalled their conversation from last week when she'd told him that she'd been one of those employees Clay had hired because she'd been down on her luck. More questions rose to the surface, but he decided to let her reveal what she wanted in her own time. Now that they'd established more than just a casual acquaintance, he didn't want to give her an opportunity to pull away, which would be too easy for her to do since she'd just expressed doubts about him.
Now that I've finally graduated and have my business degree, Clay promoted me to manager of Kincaid's, she went on, picking another piece of fried dough off her fritter. With me in charge and handling the main operations of the bar, it allows him to be home with Samantha a lot more, especially now that she's pregnant.
An unexpected pang of envy struck Jackson, and he resisted the urge to rub at the slice of pain in his chest.
He's a lucky man.
It seemed his brother had the kind of perfect life Jackson himself once believed he'd had as well. Getting married, having a devoted wife, envisioning a future with a family of his own. Yeah, Jackson had once thought he'd had everything he'd wanted since he was a young boy, unconditional love, a sense of security, and someone to create a solid life with, until he'd been blindsided by yet another betrayal by the one person he should have been able to trust the most. Unfortunately, his wife had been more interested in fucking one of his colleagues than being faithful to him, and had ultimately chosen that same guy to marry once the ink was barely dry on their divorce papers. She'd gone on to have a kid with him, further twisting that knife she'd stabbed into Jackson's heart, since he'd thought they'd been trying to conceive at the time. Colette was yet another person who'd not only deceived him, but made him feel as though he wasn't good enough. Was it any wonder he had issues when it came to trusting people with his emotional well-being? His entire life had been a farce and filled with rejection, and his marriage had been a complete sham. His track record sucked. He pushed thoughts of his ex-wife from his mind, far more interested in Tara's story.
Now that you have a degree, are you going to find another job in a different field?
No.
She hesitated, fiddling with the corner of her napkin, then seemingly decided to explain why.
I wanted a degree because, well, it helped me focus on something positive at a time in my life when I desperately needed a direction. I'm perfectly content where I am, and Clay is incredibly generous when it comes to my salary. Not only do I enjoy working at Kincaid's, a part of me owes Clay for...
She shook her head and glanced away.
Never mind. It doesn't matter.
She pretended interest in drinking her coffee, and he was beginning to realize that this woman was full of deep, difficult secrets. He wanted to know what she'd been about to say, because the pain he'd momentarily glimpsed in her eyes did matter to him. But again, he traded in one topic for another.
Does your family live around here?
He asked, hoping that was an easier subject for her to talk about. Another strained smile told him he'd missed the mark.
No, my father is an army sergeant at Camp Butler in Springfield, which is about 200 miles away from here. My parents have lived there for about 10 years now, and I don't see them much. My brother is also career military and is currently stationed in Germany.
He tipped his head, curious to know why she'd live so far away from her family.
So what brought you to Chicago?
I needed a change.
She shrugged, her reply just as vague as the rest of their exchange.
What about you? What is your family like?
Now that he was in the hot seat, he understood Tara's reluctance to delve into parts of her life that were less than perfect or ideal. He finished his coffee, debating where to best start to describe the people who'd raised him.
I'll admit I'm curious to hear how you were adopted, she went on when he remained quiet for too long,
more relaxed now that she wasn't the focus of their discussion.
Clay said his mother sold you to the woman who raised you for $3,000.
Her voice trailed off, a sudden apologetic look passing across her expression.
I'm sorry. If you'd rather not talk about it, I completely understand.
No, it's okay, he assured her.
Since learning the truth from his aunt, the only three people he'd told about the illegal adoption were Clay, Mason, and Levi. Up until this point, he'd kept everything to himself because the situation was so fucked up, and honestly, he was still trying to come to terms with his true identity, as a Kincaid and not a stone as he'd believed his entire life.
It's true,
he confirmed of his birth mother's actions and told the story as he'd heard it from his Aunt Becca a few weeks ago.
My mother, Layla, didn't think she could have kids. My father and she tried for years, and when she couldn't get pregnant, they went to a specialist who confirmed she had endometriosis, and even though she underwent surgery, the doctor told her that without fertility treatments, the likelihood of her conceiving were slim to none. At the time, my father was just getting his construction business started, and they couldn't afford the cost of in vitro fertilization, but my mother was desperate for a baby.
Tara sat back in her chair, her eyes soft and compassionate as she listened intently. He had to admit that it felt good to really talk about what had happened with someone who was sincerely interested in hearing the details, unlike his brothers, who'd only heard the bare facts and had barely believed those as it was. He exhaled and continued on.
Someone at the diner, where my mother worked, told her they knew a way she could get a newborn. They set her up with a guy who was a go-between for my birth mom, who was a junkie looking to sell one of her twins for money to buy more drugs. $3,000 in cash later, my mother had the baby she thought she'd never have.
She must have wanted you very badly to go to such extremes.
I'm sure she did,
he agreed, though he couldn't stop the bitterness that rose to the surface.
My father, though, not so much. From the moment Layla brought me home and he found out she'd bought me from a crack whore and prostitute, he didn't want to have anything to do with me. But he also realized that they were stuck with a baby she'd essentially bought on the black market, along with the lies my mother told people about how they'd adopted me through legal channels. I felt his resentment every day of my life.
He hadn't realized he'd clenched his fist on the table until she reached a hand across the space separating them and placed her cool fingers on his tense arm. He looked into her deep blue eyes, and the kindness and caring radiating from them made the tight feeling in his chest start to ease.
"Who you were born to wasn't your fault," she said emphatically.
He heard the trace of anger in her voice, all on his behalf, and it made him feel lighter somehow, knowing finally someone cared about what had been done to him. He pressed his fingers against the table before answering.
That would be a logical person's thought process, but according to my Aunt Becca, my father couldn't get over where I'd come from. When I was little, I remember wanting my father's attention so badly, and I couldn't understand why he ignored me and treated me like I was a leper. And when my mother got pregnant 5 years later and had my brother, Oliver, the fact that he was that miracle baby they never thought they'd have, and now I realize their legitimate child, made that separation between me and my father even worse.
He paused and drew a deep breath.
It was like I didn't even exist for him, and when he did acknowledge me, it was usually to point out some kind of failure or to put me down. But it was never that way with my brother. As Oliver got older, he'd take him fishing and leave me at home. He coached Oliver's soccer team and never bothered to come to any of my baseball games, and because my brother watched the disdainful way my father acted toward me, he did the same thing.
Tara winced, But Jackson was more lost in his own thoughts. Now that everything was out in the open, he couldn't seem to stop the flood of memories from escaping. It was like a vein had burst open, and all the toxic poison he'd been carrying around was finally spilling out, purging him of all the pain he'd kept buried for so long. And Tara was there, listening, comforting him with her understanding silence.
My mother died of breast cancer when I was 10, and after that, I swear I never felt so abandoned and alone and confused. I couldn't understand why my father treated me the way he did, and I spent years trying to be a good kid, doing everything I could to please him, to earn even an ounce of the attention he gave to Oliver. But it never made a difference.
Looking back, Jackson could only imagine how pathetic his father thought he'd been in his attempts to gain his approval, his affection. Jackson. Tara's husky voice was filled with heartache for him. I'm so sorry. A sharp exhale escaped him as he scrubbed a hand along his jaw. He forced an indifferent smile, trying to eliminate the oppressive mood that hung in the air now that he'd tainted it with his depressing backstory.
It is what it is, right?
She nodded, but the warmth and caring never left her gaze.
Now that you know about where you came from, have you tried talking to your father?
No.
The word came out harsh and unyielding.
We've been estranged for years. The relationship is irreparable.
Initially, he'd thought about confronting his father about the past, but Jackson knew there was nothing Paul Stone could say or do that would allow Jackson to forgive him for the emotional and mental abuse his father had put him through. There was no remorse on his father's end, so what would it resolve?
I get it, she said,
her reply giving him the impression that she'd had challenging relationships of her own that hadn't ended well either. He hoped that someday she'd trust him enough to confide in him as he'd done with her.
Some things, some people, won't ever change, she murmured. Sometimes it's for the best to just move on.
Jackson would like to believe he had moved on from his father's narrow-minded ignorance, and now he was more than ready to move on from this dismal conversation. He crumpled his napkin and stuffed it into the empty paper bag.
Jesus, for a first date, that was way too depressing, he joked.
No, it wasn't.
She smiled at him as she added her napkin to the trash, too.
I'm glad you told me. Your brothers should know how you grew up, that it wasn't as easy or perfect as they might think.
He shook his head and sighed.
I don't think they want to hear the truth.
Maybe they're not ready to hear it yet, she qualified. They're not going to ignore you forever, and I think they just need some time to come around.
She sounded so optimistic that he decided to remain hopeful as well. He had nothing left to lose.
I suppose time is the one thing I have plenty of.
Exactly,
she agreed with a bright smile as she stood, then looked down at her hands with a grimace.
I need to wash my sticky fingers before we go.
He watched her walk down a short hallway, his gaze drawn to the sensual sway of her hips and that pert ass he knew would be a distinct part of his fantasies when he went to bed tonight. Once she disappeared into a side door, he collected their empty paper cups and threw all of their trash away, then waited for her to return. As he stood there, he realized that over the course of their conversation, that constricting feeling in his chest that he'd been carrying around the past few weeks since he'd learned of his illegal adoption had decreased. It no longer felt like a crushing weight, and even some of his anger toward the situation had abated. He wasn't a guy who was big on spilling his guts and airing dirty laundry, but then again, he'd never had someone who'd been so focused on him and genuinely interested in what he had to say that wasn't work-related. In an hour's time in Tara's company, he'd given her more insight into his past, had revealed insecurities he'd carried around with him for most of his life, and laid out the entire foundation of his not-so-great childhood. Trusting someone didn't come quickly or easily for him, yet he'd let his barriers slip with her, had shared deeply emotional things with Tara that he'd never even told his ex-wife, because she'd never asked, and he'd never offered because a part of him feared she'd find him lacking. just as his father had. And fuck if that hadn't happened anyway. In the end, he'd realized that Colette had had her own agenda when it came to their marriage. She'd been enamored with his wealth, his success, and his social connections in Chicago. After 2 short years of marriage, everything had lost its luster, including him. But there was something about Tara that got him in a way that no one else ever had. Maybe it was her connection to the Kincaid brothers and being privy to their turbulent past that made it easy for her to understand all the pain and grief their birth mother had caused, for his siblings and for him, each in different ways. Or maybe it was those secrets of her own that he'd glimpsed that allowed Tara to relate so well to his predicament. Whatever the reason, he wasn't ready to let her go just yet. Chapter 5. Tara let the cool water rush over her hands as she glanced up at her reflection in the bathroom mirror, thinking how so much of what Jackson had revealed about himself had resonated with her. She might not have been illegally adopted, but her childhood had been equally rocky, and it had led to an addiction to drugs as a way to escape the pain of never being able to live up to her parents, her father's especially, expectations. Learning of their daughter's substance abuse had only compounded their disgrace and shame and condemnation, which in turn had given Tara even more of a reason to keep those opiates in her system to numb her upheaval of emotions. Instead of getting her the help she desperately needed, they'd kicked her out of the house and cut her off completely.